In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, light, and information, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence and a better understanding of ourselves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, this is Life Changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with tonight's special guest, Patrick Wenis, celebrity life coach and human behavior and relationship expert, PhD. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. You know, it's interesting. On Valentine's night, we talked about how the Egyptian police were retaliating against their own people, their family, their friends, because they were being told to do so by the regime at the time. And then days later, they started saying, well, we are with the people. The people are us. We are the people. And I said, I hope that in the future that no one will have to be put in that position again. Well, of course, it's happening. It's happening all over the world. And now in Libya, bombers are being put in the position of bombing their own family, their own friends, their own country, men and women and children, and being asked to do so by Gaddafi. And it's interesting that another two bombers decided to eject out of the plane instead of bombing a location where there were dissenters of Gaddafi's regime. And it's really interesting that I believe that they were answering to possibly a higher power, a more conscious power. And we were talking about it on Valentine's night, and here's an example just a couple weeks later. I hope and trust that we'll be seeing a lot more of that. People standing for the good, people standing for the right, people standing for what their higher consciousness is going to be saying. Now, from something that's high consciousness to something that is not as high consciousness, the Oscars were yesterday. I don't mean to take anything away from the consciousness of the Oscars, but we're going to be talking a lot about that with our guest, Patrick Wenis, tonight. But before we talk about the Oscars per se, you know, watching the parade of styles, what's in, what's not in, what's fashionable, what's cool, what's looking great, reminds me of a little while back, I had some friends tell me, and granted, they admittedly call themselves shallow at times. So tell me that I dressed like their grandfather and I needed to up the way I dressed, make it more cool. So we went shopping and we were on this rack looking at jeans. And one of them said, now this is the pair of jeans you should be wearing. That pair of jeans had more holes in it than my old pair of jeans at home. And the ones that they wanted me to throw away looked newer than the ones they wanted me to spend, I don't know, $200-$300 on. And I thought, this is cool. This is hip. And here I was being criticized because my jeans had no holes in them. And then another pair of shoes that they had me look at that were shoes that my parents could only afford to buy me at the time, and so I got teased because I wore those particular shoes or another pair of shoes that were all, they were all afraid, like the shoes I used to wear because we couldn't afford to buy shoes, new shoes, as often as I needed them as a child or thought I needed them. Who knew? I was really fashionable at the time. I had clothes that were starting to get holes on them and my mother would patch them. I had shoes with holes on them and I had shoes that had frays on them. And I was not fashionable. I was teased a lot. And now I'm being teased somewhat, doesn't hurt as much, because my clothes are new and they don't have holes in them and my shoes don't have holes in them and my shoes aren't frayed. And I thought, wow, what happened? In a few short years, what if I was wearing what I used to wear as a kid, I'd be cool. But I grew up thinking I was uncool because that's not what the kids wore back then. And is this really that important? Was it really important to tease me because I had holes in my clothes growing up, or patched holes, some of them? Is it really important for me to dress with holes now in order for me to be cool? Is it really important for a star to be walking down the red carpet wearing this particular dress or that particular tuxedo made by this particular person or that particular person? And should we really be judging as who was the best dressed or the worst dressed? Those stars have feelings too, and we're going to be talking about that. As a matter of fact, some of those stars probably got teased when they were kids too, and we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, as well. So I'm thinking, I appreciate my friends telling me that they want me to look more cool and more hip. There's nothing wrong with that. And their teasing, I took lightly. But I'm thinking more of the children. I'm thinking of the children, the ones that can afford to dress the way that other kids do, the ones that can't afford to dress the way the other kids do. And I have a feeling that we might want to teach our children or share with our children that the way a person dresses, especially if they're clean, maybe isn't that much of a judge of character. And I think I turned out pretty good. Who knows? Maybe the teasing helped. So anyway, with that, we're going to be right back after this talking about celebrities, talking about deservability, and talking about the Oscars with Patrick Wanis.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. And ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays Water Systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays Water Systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page.
You might not be able to tell this from the way he talks, but I'm going to give it away. Our guest is originally from Australia. He's Patrick Kwan. He's PhD. He's a celebrity life coach, and hence why we're going to be talking about the Oscars that just happened last night. He's also an author. He's an expert in human behavior and relationships and a clinical hypnotherapist. He's also the creator of Subconscious Rapid Transformation Therapy, which he calls RSTT, with a PhD in health psychology. Now, I have to mention this because he gets called on television all the time by all of these shows, including Fox News, MSNBC, Extra, The Montel Williams Show. I mean, the list goes on and on. When Michael Jackson died, Fox News or CNN went to him to ask him about his expert insight. So we have the guy who will give us the expert insight on the Oscars, the celebrities, and deservability here, or deservedness. Here is Patrick Wanis.
Thank you. You're pausing like I meant to do something. Do I do a dance?
I don't know. Do you know a dance?
I do, actually. Yeah, I was also a professional dancer. But
oh, you are? That's another story. Yeah. Okay. Well, last night was this big event. And I know you've been on several shows already today talking about the stars and the Oscars. So just before we start, give us your overview on what kind of a show we were watching last night.
Well, I don't know that, to be completely open, I don't think it matters what my opinion is about the show. What more is more important is your opinion and the people that are listening and watching. I'll just give my perspective. I thought it was an awful show, but that's just my opinion. It doesn't mean that it's correct or incorrect. It's just an opinion.
Novel, you say? In what
no,
sense?
No, awful.
Oh, awful. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, because James Franco and Anne Hathaway were not great hosts. They don't compare to Billy Crystal. I mean, you know, when Billy Crystal came on, everyone went nuts because, like, oh, we've missed you. You also have to look at the event and why did they choose Anne Hathaway and James Franco? Of course, they've got current movies, but television right now is going for the younger demographic as much as they can, because the younger demographic isn't watching television.
Ah.
They're all going to the internet.
Mm.
So the only way that they're saying, how do we get the 25 to 39 age group, or even the 18 to 35 age group, so they get the younger people, you know, James Franco and Anne Hathaway. The problem is that they alienate most of their audience because they weren't really talented.
Well, actually,
not in that position.
Right, because they are talented.
Yeah, but we're talking about that talent. I mean,
right.
you're extremely talented, obviously, musically. I can see the piano. But if I said to you, build me the house, you might go, I have no idea. That means you're not talented as a builder, but you might be very talented as a pianist or as someone else. So that was the first challenge. You mentioned something interesting about fashion and the Oscars, and, you know, people make such a big thing about what is this person wearing and how much does it cost? Okay, personally, I don't care. Having said that, you said something else was very significant. You talked about growing up as a child and wearing certain clothes and being teased for them and then going through the same experience as an adult. Nothing that we really do has any meaning or significance except for the meaning and significance to which we give it.
Mm.
So the jeans that are now $300 by Seven and True Religion and all these brands
right. That
have got rips and holes, it's because the majority are saying, we think that this is good.
Mm.
And so what do? We fall into the majority and say, it's good because everyone else says it's good.
Mm.
And what we forget is the answer lies in The Devil Wears Prada. Who makes the decision that this year jeans with vertical rips are hip and cool?
Mm.
It's some cool designer, or maybe an uncool designer, somewhere in Italy, sitting in a little shop, saying, I think I'm going to make this hole here, and then people are going to love the color. And then suddenly, that's the color you get. And it was it was very well put and explained in The Devil Wears Prada when the character says, so you chose the blue sweater from the bargain bin and you thought that you were deciding what you're going to wear, but you chose something that was in the bargain bin.
Right.
Meaning you didn't create it. You still had to choose from what was put in front of you.
Right.
So my point is it any different when someone says, oh, I'm a nonconformist, I don't wear all these brand names, but then they go to a little hip store, maybe in Venice Beach or wherever they are in whatever part of the country or world they're in, and they choose some other designer?
Mm.
Is it any different?
That's kind of like the girls, the young girls that used to dress like Madonna and say, I'm expressing myself.
Right. And I'm saying that there isn't a black and white answer to this, but you need to look inside yourself and ask yourself the question, why do I wear what I wear? Who decides whether it's cool and who cares? I truly don't care. I mean, obviously, it's like Don Miguel Ruiz with the Four Agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And he raises a good point. And I always look for the balance, because I think in the Four Agreements, he goes to an extreme. When he says, you know, don't ever take anything personally and who cares what anyone else thinks. That's partially true, but not completely true. If I didn't care at all about what other people think, I might have no respect for anyone else. I might not even think about the consequences of my actions. I might be disrespectful, rude, and inconsiderate. You need to find the balance. So for me, I say, look, I don't really care what people think, but obviously if someone gives me a compliment, I'm going to say, I don't care what you think. I've read Don Miguel Ruiz. I don't need your approval. I mean, then I'd be rude instead of saying, thank you very much. Whatever anyone says to you as a gift, you decide, are you going to choose that gift or send it away or put it away? So you decide what you're going to give meaning to, what you're going to give meaning.
Mm.
You know, I selected this jacket. I just bought it yesterday because
very nice jacket.
Thank you. And
you look Italian almost.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
And I put it on. And I think it's really nice. Now, if someone compliments me, I'll accept the compliment because I want to be a good receiver. If someone goes, oh, that's a stupid jacket. That's really outdated. That looks like it could be the 80s or the 90s. I'll go, okay. Because I'm not attaching my value to what you're saying about me. And I want to pull in a celebrity since we're talking about celebrities.
Right.
Most of the interviews I've been giving today were not so much about the Oscars as they were about Charlie Sheen. And it's interesting because in a very lengthy interview, he said, when someone was questioning him about his success, his present state of mind, he said, well, the car that I drive and the girls that I have. What he was just telling everyone is, my value is determined by the car I'm driving
right.
and the girls that surround me.
Right.
My value is determined purely externally, which is why he's turning to drugs, which is why he's completely lost, because he has no inner value. I'm not saying he doesn't have value. I'm saying he can't find his own value.
Inside.
Inside. Look, we're always affected by what's outside of us. It's absolutely absurd to say, I am an enlightened being. I'm not affected by anything around me. Well, then go to another planet. Go fly away. You are affected. That's why we choose a certain furniture. We choose ionized water. We choose organic food. We choose to live in this kind of house and we want to climb the mountain because the external does affect the internal. The problem is when we let the external completely control and determine our internal. Mm. There has to be a balance. How can I say when I'm standing at the top of a beautiful, majestic mountain overlooking the ocean and the sun is shining and the water's glittering and the sun is sparkling and dancing in the water, how can I say I'm not affected by that in a positive way? Mm. Of course I am. And how can I say, as I watch children around me starving, as I did in Africa when I lived in West Africa, how can I say, as I see them dying from malnutrition or dying from a lack of hygiene, how can I say I'm not affected because nothing outside of me affects me?
Right.
It's completely absurd. I think that what the teachers teach that is great is when you take their pearls of wisdom and you find the balance and the essence of the teaching, you don't take it to an extreme. And that's where so many teachers have made the mistake. And we might talk about this later when we start talking about the law of deservedness, the law of attraction. Because right. I'd love to also talk about James Arthur Ray.
Well, actually, right. But sticking to, you mentioned Charlie Sheen, but so he might have been like one of those actors that maybe got teased as a child or it was something that he did not find his own value. And so he's looking for it, as you say, maybe outside of himself.
That's a great point. There are really two kind, maybe three kinds of celebrities. There's the celebrities who set out to become a celebrity. There's the celebrities who become a celebrity as a byproduct of their art. That's the person like a Robert De Niro, who's really primarily focused and interested in his art.
Right.
And then he becomes famous and that's the byproduct of his art. The third kind of celebrity is the person that sets out to get attention. Not necessarily become famous or become a celebrity, but he wants attention to try and fill the inner emptiness. Mm. That's the person that could be an actor, a singer, a dancer, a musician who had no voice when they were a child, who had no way of expressing themselves. Classic example, I've often used this one, is Boy George. Now, I know we're talking about an 80s icon who's still around and was worshipped by Rosie O'Donnell. And the reason I'm using him is because he's an extreme. And I could also use Michael Jackson too, but Boy George dressed up androgynously and his makeup was over the top. You couldn't tell if he was a boy or a girl. He said in an interview, and he explained very clearly, the whole reason he became a singer was because in his house, at the table, at the kitchen table, the dining table, he had no voice. He was not allowed to say anything.
Hmm.
He had no expression. So what do I do when no one's listening? I speak louder, or I do something to get more attention, or I sing, or I dress up to possibly rebel against you because you, my parents, are very strict and you're telling me this is the box you must live in. And I'm saying, I want to smash the box. I want to do what I want to do. Again, it comes back to one of my key principles, find the balance. The balance between I have an expression, I want to share that, I want to give that, versus all I want to do is rebel and say, you can't tell me how to express myself, so I'm going to paint my face different colors and dye my hair and wear different colors just to prove to you that you can't control me and to prove to you I'm different. But I still don't know who I am. I don't know what my identity is. Charlie Sheen has had many challenges. I haven't spoken to him and sat down with him and said, okay, what is it you want that you don't yet have, other than obvious inner peace? But he definitely has anger and rage. I mean, it's extremely obvious. He obviously has anger and rage at women because he's hit women. He pleaded guilty to assaulting his wife, Brooke Mueller.
Right.
That means if we're going to be, without becoming pop psychologists, but if we go back to his childhood, there's something missing that he's trying to get.
Mm.
If I don't get approval and acceptance as a child from my brothers, my sisters, my parents, my peers, I'll spend my whole life trying to get that approval. If I get hit as a child,
not necessarily from your parents or the peers,
but from people around me to try and make up for it. Mm-hmm. Another example is I'm raised as a child, I'm beaten. I'm raised with very strict parents, I'm controlled and I'm beaten and I'm abused. I will end up in a relationship where I am beaten and abused and possibly controlled. First, because it might be my twisted definition and version of love. And second, because that's what I also believe I deserve, and because I don't think I deserve anything better than that.
You know, you're saying so much that's so important. And interestingly, you're giving me the other side of what I was just about to say. And that is, so many people look at the celebrities as role models.
Yeah, and that's not a good idea.
And especially with last night, this is the biggest night for Hollywood. And of course, everybody is in their best behavior and dressed to the nines, etc. And so many people say, oh, I want to be that, or I want to look like that, I want to do that, I want to wear that. And yet you're saying that so many of these celebrities are showing classic signs of having failed or having issues. And that actually could be a lesson to us, since they're there to look at anyway.
Felipe, you've raised so many points. I want to try and start at the top. First thing is, I think you have to be very careful anytime you make anyone a role model. One of the things that I teach, going back again to balance, is separate the art from the artist. Separate the teacher from the message. Separate the guru from the teacher. And I personally don't like to call people gurus. People have called me guru. I don't like that term. What I'm saying is, listen for the pearls of wisdom. Mm. But be careful that you don't think that this is the oyster. That because I have a great message, therefore I'm a great person. No, I don't want you to think that. I want you to look at me and still recognize I'm a human being. I have insecurities, I have self-doubts, I make mistakes, I'm imperfect. But guess what? I have a gift. My gift might be my message. Your gift might be your musical message and expression. Someone else's gift might be their cooking. Someone else's gift might be their words, might be their very presence. But separate the art from the artist.
Interesting.
With the exception when the artist's personal life starts destroying their art or starts endangering other people. I said it about Mel Gibson. I also, in the beginning, said it about Charlie Sheen before the violence came into it. Appreciate the actor as an actor. What he does in his own personal time is his business. But once he starts committing violence or endangering other people, then it's time to say the art is irrelevant. We now have to look at you, the artist, and say, what are you doing that's right? What are you doing that's wrong? The same applies to so many of these teachers. Why do we choose, I mean, I have the answer, but it's a rhetorical question. Why do we choose to put all these teachers, the ones that we clap for half an hour standing up because they're on a stage, whether it's Jack Canfield, Deepak Chopra, Janet Atwood, me, you, anyone. I'm not even putting myself on the same level as them. I'm just saying, why do we worship them? Don't worship them. Don't put them on a pedestal because they'll take themselves down or you'll take them down.
Are you getting to James?
Yes. Now, there's two reasons here because this. Now I'm going to tie this into the celebrity. You said, do we make celebrities role models? Well, we're doing that anyway. Even in the world of self-help and personal development, we do that all the time. We have our own celebrities. Oh, I want to get my book signed by so-and-so. Oh, I want to go hear so-and-so speak. And we go gaga over them. Is that any different to the average person that goes gaga over a celebrity? It's not when you place someone on a pedestal and you think they're superior. The message might be superior.
Mm.
And don't think that every teacher is a student of their own teaching. They're not always. The same applies to celebrities. Then you said, well, when you see celebrities up there, Patrick, you're telling us that they have issues. We all have issues. If you think we don't, then that's your issue, that you think we don't have issues. Every one of us has an issue. Every one of us has an insecurity. The challenge for celebrities is if they've been motivated by an insecurity to prove something to their parents, to get their parents' approval, to say, look, Mum, I am great. I can do what I want. Look how much attention I'm getting. And or being a celebrity then exaggerates and amplifies, magnifies and exacerbates all of their problems.
Mm.
More money makes you more of who you are. The more money you have, the more you'll become who you really are. It won't necessarily change you. Hollywood does make you more of who you are, and if you're not grounded and you don't stay humble and you don't remind yourself that your primary mission is to express your gift and share your gift and make a positive difference. If you don't constantly remind yourself of that, you'll think you're a god. You'll think you're superior. Then you become narcissistic and entitled. I talked about that with Tiger Woods. The very first time the scandal came out about Tiger Woods having an affair with another woman, they called me on radio and they said, do you think he's a sex addict? I said, no. Why would you even think that? Rock stars sleep with more women in a weekend. But no one calls them a sex addict. Mm. However, I said, I bet you he stopped meditating. I bet you he lost his faith. Something's happened because this guy used to meditate every day, and that's how he became so great at golf. And I said, he's become a narcissist, he's become entitled, he's lost his faith, he's lost his way, and he's become self-absorbed and self-indulgent.
Wow.
What does he say in his press conference about 3 months later? I became narcissistic, I became entitled, I lost my way, I lost my faith, I stopped meditating, and I realized that I had so much power, I thought I could do whatever I want. That's everything that I teach, what I call the fame factor, delusions of grandeur and denial, and the belief that you start to believe your own press. Your publicist tells everyone how great you are, and then you keep reading. You go, yes, I am great. I'm great. I'm great. I'm great. I'm great. Then you start looking down at other people, and you become like Charlie Sheen. You say, they're all losers. I'm a winner.
Mm.
But underneath, he doesn't even believe that. Because narcissism comes from deep deficits in your self-esteem.
Well, you're really breaking it down.
Thank you.
And what a gift you're giving to people who get lost in that or want to be something and then get lost in that as well. You know, when we come back, you, I know, have an answer to the celebrities that get up there and say, of course, we've all learned about the law of attraction, right? So if we think of something, we can attract it. So then you get these celebrities that go up there and say, oh, I never expected this to happen. You think,
I never imagined it in my life.
Wait a minute. If you never imagined it, but I've been imagining it all my life, how come you have the Oscar and I don't? So when we come back, you have a different law that you say is even more important than the law of attraction. And we'll talk about that with Patrick Juanes when we come back.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio with Life Changes with Filippo here on the BBS Radio Network, presented by Life Changes Network. And we're talking to Patrick Juanes, who is a celebrity life coach. He's an author. He's an expert in human behavior. As a matter of fact, you've probably heard some of his expertise coming out in great style. You can actually learn more about him at his website, patrickjuanes.com. That's Patrick Juanes, spelled WANIS.com. And there you can also get a few of his books. He's got several out. As a matter of fact, they've been read by millions of people, both in English and in Spanish. You can get What You Want, or you can get Over It, or What a Woman Wants. So it's all there at patrickjuanes.com. So, Patrick, we started to talk about before the break celebrities that say things like, I never expected to win. How is that the law of attraction at work?
It's very interesting. And a classic example is Annette Bening, who's a four-time Academy nominee, and saying, I never imagined my life like this. I never expected it to be this. Then you have someone like Cam Newton, who's a footballer, a Heisman Trophy winner, who also said the same thing. I never expected this to happen. I never believed it possible.
Hmm.
And then you have other people, like Diane Weiss, or Diane West, I always have a problem saying her name, the famous actress, who says, And I couldn't tell if she was joking when she says this, but she says, this wasn't the way I imagined it in my bathtub. And what she's saying is, you know, and other celebrities have said it specifically, I've dreamed about this day since being a child. You know, sat there in the bathtub thinking, wow, collecting my Oscar. Then you have others who didn't talk about it at all. Here's another classic quotation, and then I'll answer your question. Russell Crowe in 2000 won the Academy Award for Best Actor for Gladiator.
Right.
And in collecting the award, he gave a very short speech, spoke from his heart, spoke with humility, and he also spoke with gratitude when he said, growing up in the suburbs of Sydney or Auckland or anywhere in the world, a dream like this is vaguely ludicrous and completely unattainable. But he says, but for all those, and then he talks about, but this, referring to this night, this moment, is directly connected to those childhood imaginings. And then he says, for all of those of you who are on the downside of advantage and are only relying on courage, it's possible. Now, what he's telling you is that he did imagine it. He did think, even though he says it's ludicrous, it's unattainable, but he had some imagining. He also tells you he depended on courage. And then he also tells you he believed it was possible. But he never focused on, I want to be a star. This is where I'm leading to. I teach the law of deservedness. The law of deservedness states, and this is something that I've coined, a phrase that I coined before The Secret came out, actually, that you'll get only what you subconsciously believe you deserve. And you won't get any more. And if you do get more, you'll either not enjoy it, turn to drugs like Charlie Sheen and all the others. You'll sabotage it like Charlie Sheen and the others, or you'll push it away. Think of the women who end up in one bad relationship after another.
Does Lindsay Lohan fall in there somewhere?
Yes, she does. And the reason she falls in that category is because of what she experienced as a child with her relationship with her parents. Her parents were more interested in themselves than they were in her. They didn't say, you're our child, so we want to give to you. They said, you're our child, we want to take from you. Meaning, we're using you as a stepping stone for us. If a child doesn't get the basic needs, validation, acceptance, approval, recognition, a sense of belonging, praise, encouragement, guidance, direction, and discipline and boundaries, then obviously that child is going to grow up thinking that there's something wrong with them. Having said that, none of us have a completely perfect childhood. We understand that. But some have a more dysfunctional childhood than others. Having said that, I'll give you this as an example to explain a bit more about the law of deservedness. When parents divorce, the child or children will always blame themselves at a subconscious level. And I know this because I work with the adults who will tell me about when they were children, 5, 6, 4 years of age, and they always think, my parents divorced, it must be my fault. My parent is leaving, they're leaving me. Not they're leaving the marriage or the other person, they're leaving me. My parents are arguing, it must be my fault. Because a child actually thinks that they can control mum and dad. And in fact, if mum and dad are sad or depressed or unhealthy, the child grows up with this guilt complex of, I want to make my parents happy. I want my mum to be happy. I want her to be healthy. I want my father to be this. I want them to be that. So
Right. Adults
have expectations of children, but children equally have expectations of adults. And if the adults don't, in a balanced way, teach the child that you are good enough, you deserve success, then the child's either not going to strive for success, not going to try to get success, and if they do, they won't enjoy it, or they'll sabotage it. Now, I'm not going to the other extreme, which is the people today that say, oh, tell your children how wonderful they are, how great they are. No, don't tell them that if they're not great or wonderful. If their behavior is wrong and it's disrespectful, then you correct that behavior. Correct the behavior without telling the kid that they're bad. It's about balance. You have to have boundaries. You can't say to the kid...
So the behavior can be bad, but don't make the child.
See, if I say to you, what you did was really wrong, you just hurt your sister. Look at your sister. This is what you did to your sister, because when you hit her, you hurt her. what you just did was wrong. I still love you, but understand that everything you do has a consequence. You hit her, the consequence is she's hurt. You hit her, the second consequence is time out for you in the corner, or you're not going to get to go out, or whatever it is. Mm. So you're teaching them also that there's cause and effect. Mm. And this is the example of Russell Crowe, cause and effect, meaning that he took action. See, a lot of the criticism about Law of Attraction was that in many ways it was promoted as fantasy, as a dream, versus a vision to which you apply energy and action. I can't sit there on the beach going, oh, one day I'm going to be a great actor. I'm going to be a great actor and say, have they arrived yet? Where's the casting director? I'm here. Where's Steven Spielberg? Mm. I have to get up off the sand. I have to go and take acting classes. Even if I'm not taking acting classes, I have to go for an audition. I have to actually walk the streets. And if someone says, like they did to Gabourey Sidibe, would you like to audition for this part? I have to say yes or no. I have to take action. I'm responsible for my manifestation. The next thing is I do have to believe it's possible. I don't have to know how I'm going to do it, but I have to say I'm going to do it. Russell Crowe talked about courage. Courage is acting in spite of fear. That means I'm afraid, I'm doubting myself, but I'm going to do it anyway. There is no way in the world that in every moment you can have 100% self-confidence, self-assuredness. How can you do that when you've never ridden a bike before and you're a kid? How can you do that when you're in front of a stage of 10,000 people and you've never been in front of a stage of 10,000 people? You are going to have moments of self-doubt, but you act in spite of fear. Hmm. The other thing is that you've got to emotionalize what you're doing. And the final one for me, and you obviously have to visualize it too, but this is the most important one, and I want to talk about this in a little more detail in a moment. What are you focused on? Are you focused on the Los Angeles motto? Hello, what can you do for me? Mm. Or are you focused on how can I fulfill my potential? How can I make a positive difference in this world? Mm. How can I use my gifts and talents? You see, people like Russell Crowe weren't focusing on I want to get the award. They weren't focusing on I want to get the accolades. They were focusing on finding the opportunity to express their art at the highest level. That's what he was talking about. When he talks about childhood imaginings, he's not saying imagining me being a great star and walking on the stage in my wonderful flowing robes and getting awards. No, he was talking about coming from a little suburb in Sydney or Auckland, making it to Los Angeles, getting great big parts, and then being recognized and respected and validated by your peers, because that's what the Oscars are.
Now, how does the law of deservedness fit into that?
Well, if he's a person that doesn't believe he deserves the success or doesn't think he's good enough, he won't take any action. He might put the poster up on the wall, but he'll ignore it, or subconsciously he'll say, I don't deserve it. You see, you can put the poster up on the wall of you having whatever it is you want, being thin or slim or being rich.
Like a vision board, you mean?
A vision board. Uh-huh. And 25 years ago, it was called called treasure mapping.
Okay.
See, a lot of people think, well, this is new. No, it's not. 30-something years ago, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, he was teaching it, and it was called treasure mapping. Same thing. Nonetheless, you can put it up on the board, but subconsciously, every time you walk past there, there's a message that says, that's not for you. It might be your mother's voice, your father's voice saying, you're not good enough.
Yeah, you look at it and you're saying, yeah, right.
Or you say, yeah, right. You've just cancelled it out. Yeah. Now you can sit there every day and go, I am rich, I am thin, I am happy, I'm healthy. But the emotion in you cancels that out in a second when the deeper belief that was ingrained in you from a child says, you don't deserve to be thin. You don't deserve to be happy. Or if you become thin, people will love you for the wrong reasons. Or you'll get attention that your mom said, you shouldn't get that attention. Don't dress like that. You're attracting boys. You see what I'm saying? Mm.
So despite that, though, people do end up getting thin or people do end up getting rich, and you're saying if they still don't feel they deserve it, then
they'll turn to drugs. They'll turn to drugs, they'll turn to alcohol, they'll turn to substance abuse. They will sabotage their own career. Charlie Sheen has so many unresolved issues. Obviously some towards women, obviously issues with his father. Obviously he's trying to escape a reality and he's trying to create a new emotion. But there's so much stuff that he hasn't dealt with that the success is meaningless. What does he say to you? I drive a great car. I've got lots of girls. Because he's saying to you, inside I feel empty. I can't find what I like about myself. Mm. So I'm going to go into this state of delusion. I'm going to talk about having a 10,000-year-old brain and having tiger blood and Adonis DNA. And you people with normal brains, you can't understand me. You can't process me. It's not just the drug speaking. It's his deeper belief. It's the narcissism. So if you push yourself to take action and you visualize and you emotionalize and you believe it's possible and you get it, if at a deep emotional subconscious level you don't believe that you deserve that, that you're not good enough to have it, or that there's something wrong with you or missing in you, you'll sabotage it. You'll push it away. That's why women sometimes are not attracted to men that treat them well. Because they believe at a deeper level they should be treated like crap. They'll say, he treats me so well, but I don't, I'm just not attracted to him. Then along comes the bad boy that she's either trying to change, that she wants to mold and control, or she thinks that that's what she deserves, to be hit or treated crap or treated poorly. So the law of attraction in itself isn't enough. You have to believe that you deserve it. Now, you can also override a lot of the self-doubt and even the guilt and the blame and, oh, I'm not good enough, if you focus on how you're going to help other people.
Oh, interesting.
No. See, if I focus on my message, I'm going to look, I have doubts. Today I was driving to a TV interview, and it was with the national morning show, the number one national TV morning show in Australia. That's my home country. And would you believe this? I don't get nervous when I'm on Fox News, MSNBC, or any of the biggest networks in America. But when it comes time to be on Australian television, I'm shaking in my boots. I'm like,
your people are watching you.
And my brother says to me, Patrick, why do you keep swallowing like that? What's wrong with you? Don't you drink water? I said, no, I'm nervous.
You haven't swallowed once this whole time.
Because I'm not nervous. And he says to me, and I said, well, that's because I'm nervous. He goes, what? I go, yeah, because obviously I have insecurity when it comes to being in front of my country, which means that's triggering for me my own self-doubt. It's not triggered here in America as much. I mean, obviously it will be. But I have to remind myself, Patrick, why are you here? Is this about you or is it about what you're going to say? See, I don't ever, ever, ever get nervous when I'm doing therapy, ever. You can put the hardest case in front of me and I'll never get nervous, because that is the only moment that I believe I'm in my purest state and I'm not thinking about me at all. I'm not thinking, will he like me? Will he approve of me? Will he accept me? Will he want to work with me again? Will this work? I get into, you know, what they typically call the zone, which simply means I relax and I listen and I'm right there. I'm feeling everything he's saying. I'm sensing. I'm even visualizing some of the things that person's visualizing. I'm connected.
I'm so right here with you that I haven't been thinking about myself or the fact that we're supposed to be breaking for a commercial. So hold that thought. We'll have a few minutes to recap at the end here after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
And we're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, and we're talking to Patrick Juanis. Again, I want to remind you that you can go to patrickjuanis.com, that's W-A-N-I-S.com, to learn more about Patrick and also to see his videos in which he's on television talking about other celebrities. And one of the things I like is that you're not putting them down. You are using them as examples, or you are actually giving advice to them on camera, and hopefully they're listening. There is one person that you mentioned that we wanted to touch on, and since he has been so important to the
self-help,
and to the law of attraction and all that stuff, I want to make sure that we touch on James Arthur Ray,
who was in The Secret. And this is really, this is a classic example, because you say, well, law of attraction, if law of attraction is the only thing necessary, how did James Arthur Ray attract into his world, into his reality, three deaths, sickness, lawsuits, loss of money, loss of credibility? How did he do that? Did he have a vision board that said every day, I'm going to attract murders, people are going to die around me, I'm going to be sued, I might end up in jail? Did he do that? And then you have to ask yourself another question. What about stalkers? Stalkers have pictures of, say, Julia Roberts, if it's a stalker who's stalking Julia Roberts, the whole wall is full of Julia Roberts. The person has watched every film. They know every line. They visualize. They fantasize every day, every moment about that person. But they don't end up having a relationship with them. So is it just about visualizing? In the case of James Arthur Ray, part of it is our fault because we made him a guru. Goes back to what I said in the beginning. Don't make anyone a guru. Mm. Listen to the message. The second challenge is that I personally feel, my opinion, is that James Arthur Ray got caught up in the hype. Because a lot of people who market to the self-help personal development audience want to say that they've got something that no one else knows. I have the secret. They love the word the secret, not just for the film and the book, but for everything. He talked about, I climbed Peru or wherever he went, I don't know where he went, the Andes, the Mandes, the Fandes. He climbed somewhere and spent years meditating, pondering, connecting with the gods, going back in time, and I have a message that no one else has. No, you don't. Because we don't need to learn anything new. We need to unlearn everything we've been taught. Most of what we've been taught is lies. We come in a pure state. Do we need to learn much else? We need to learn how to talk and walk, to connect and communicate. But really, we need to unlearn all the lies that have been taught us about our own limitations rather than our own potential. I think James Arthur Ray got caught up in believing his own hype, just like other celebrities do, And I think that what happened for him was he started to believe that he was a god. And I'm not a god. You know, we might talk about there's a divinity within us, there's a spark, yes. But when you start to promote yourself as a god, you're saying I'm superior to you. That's not acknowledging the divinity in you or the divinity in me or that we're all creations of a god or a higher power.
So what happened to him was what? A retaliation of the gods?
No, not at all. I'm saying that you create your own reality via your actions, via your thoughts, via your emotions. If you are thinking primarily about greed, I'm going to charge these people $10,000, when I could be charging them a couple of thousand. I could be offering it as gifts because I've already got money. He had a nice $5 million home in Beverly Hills. Did he have to have that? I'm not saying he can't have it, but look at the whole picture. Then the next thing is, am I starting to believe that I'm superior, that I have all this knowledge? And then what are his other thoughts? What is his background as a child? I don't know.
Right.
Is there a part of him that feels, I don't deserve to have this success, maybe I'm an imposter? Because that's the other thing that most celebrities experience. The subconscious belief or question, I'm an imposter.
Which goes back to, I don't deserve this.
Yes. Do I deserve it? Am I good enough? When I ask this myself sometimes, when I'm on TV, I go, am I an imposter? And I think it's okay to ask that question if it keeps you humble. Humble isn't about saying, I don't deserve anything.
Right.
It's about gratitude. Humility is connected to gratitude. Humility is, I'm grateful for this gift you've given me. I'm grateful for this opportunity to be on TV. I'm grateful to be here tonight to share my message with people. That's what keeps me humble. But when I think, you're lucky to have me here, then I've gone past that. I've gone to a whole different level. So there are many people in the Oscars who express humility and gratitude. Natalie Portman thanked every single person she worked with. Her hairstylist, the person that did her nails, the person that cooked her food, her family, everyone. But it didn't come from a place of I'm not deserving. It came from a place of humility and gratitude. Tom Hanks, when he won the award for Philadelphia, said, I shouldn't be here. But I am here because of the union of all these great people around me, the filmmakers. He was expressing humility. He was also saying, you know what? I'm not that great. Yes, I have a gift, but I'm not that great. Without these people, I'd be one person.
And this would have been a better show last night if we had seen a lot more of that. But I don't know that we saw a lot of that, actually.
No, we didn't. Natalie Portman was one example. Right. I think Colin Firth is also very humble right. in the way that he expressed himself. I mean, he said it very eloquently when he basically said, look, I'm going to wet myself. I'm so excited. You know, my legs are going crazy. But right. he said it eloquently. And then you have the people that want to get up there and tell the world how great they are. Or Christian Bale, who I'm very confused about, because every time he gets an award, he tries to tell everyone, you're all so amazing. I really don't deserve to be here. And I can't work out if it's coming from a place of sincerity, insecurity, or something else.
Well, I don't know.
But I'll leave that thought. It's not relevant. It's just a question. Because I'd like to analyze things as you can.
As I can tell. And I can't wait to have you back on the show where we can analyze other things. In the meantime, we've covered a lot of ground. Thank you for helping wrap up the Oscars for us, the celebrities, and sharing with us the law of deservedness.
Thank you.
Patrick Wanis, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, what a great time to have Patrick on the show, because this helped me understand more of what I like about the Oscars, what I don't like about the Oscars, what I think there should be more of, what I think there should be less of.
I think that the points that you touched on at the end are some of the most amazing to me, that there seems to be more of a bifurcation between those that are there to move themselves up the ladder and those that you can truly tell are there to share the experience or to move other people.
Yeah, I liked that. That was interesting. When it's not about them.
Yeah, which I don't think there's enough of. And that's certainly not just Hollywood. That's whatever.
Yeah, actually, this applies to, though they're not on television worldwide being seen, but CEOs and presidents and managers and all kinds of people.
Yeah, very much. I think that, you know, this bleeds over into every aspect of life and largely why we're on the radio, which is we've entered into an age of authenticity, right? People standing in their truth. And more importantly, I think people are listening or hearing or with consciousness raising, they're feeling at a different level. They're seeing through the BS, if you will, right? And they're not tolerating just the stories or the package that people have made for themselves or what they're bringing forward. They're seeing through that to the integrity of where they're coming from.
And actually, this is interesting because it brings me back to the point that I made at the beginning of the show about a world leader who might have gotten into himself or his own power or his own belief, like Gaddafi or these other ones that are falling or the ones that have fallen. People are starting to say, "Oh, come on, get over yourself."
Well, yeah, and you're seeing the difference, with the Egyptian movement versus what's going on in Libya. The depth of someone's attachment to their ego or position and their denial of what's truly going on around them. You know, the separation going on in Libya is obviously a much, much harder road. And it's because the depth of attachment there is much greater, whereas there was a willingness to move out of the way for the people in other areas.
And so I wonder, because we've been talking about celebrities, I wonder how that's going to change. Is it going to be the people saying, oh, come on, get over yourself. You know, you're not all that. You know, you're just good at what you do. Are the people going to realize that, or...
I think it's going to be a natural reaction. I think people have already started. If you watch the reactions to what's going on with Charlie Sheen, because he's, you know, what we've been talking about, because he's on top of the headline, there's a natural outpouring of response now, whereas before people would find things humorous or kind of write it off as kind of just the way certain people are. People are they're not tolerating it anymore, or they're calling truth out a little bit more. There are people who seem to be much more vocal about where people are coming from, where celebrities are coming from, what their reactions are, or whether they're not considering the people around them. I think that was a big thing in this episode with Charlie Sheen, from my perspective, was how little there was concern for the people around him from his camp, but yet those watching from the outside in were really concerned about everybody else involved in the show and his whole team and, you know, the effect and how that was rippling way beyond just his microcosm.
Yeah, because ultimately, an actor is an actor, yes, and they are playing a role, but their biggest role is that of themselves, and where they go, there they are. And though they could portray something else, which is great, underlying, there is who they truly are.
Indeed, an age of authenticity. It's an interesting time, and you know, everybody's adjusting to the levels of truth in their own life, and you know, it's showtime's changed a bit. It's, the truth is starting to rise to the front, and the production value is now matched by people's ability to kind of see past some of that. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, actually, and you know, and it's not just celebrities or as we said, CEOs or managers, or it's amongst ourselves as well. We don't take as much from some of our friends or from some of our, you know, our coworkers. It's like, you know, come on, you know, let's get past this. Let's get over yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Not taking much from them and not allowing them to dish out too much on ourselves. You know, going back to that, some of what you were talking about before about the self-loathing or people kind of falling apart along the way. There's a lot of this, an ability to just really cut to the truth and stand up for yourself a little bit more, whether it's in your own life or whether it's for your country and you know, this fight for freedom. I think it's kind of pervasive.
And that takes me back to the beginning of the show. I could have been standing up as a child saying, I have holes in my shoes and holes in my jeans and I am proud. And right now I don't have holes in my shoes and don't have holes in my jeans and I am still proud. And with that, I'd like to say I am Filippo Voltaggio, and I am proud to have been of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. I, along with our producer, Mark Lejeune, and our producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our engineer, Seth Hendricks, thank you for being part of this show, being part of this world, and being part of the change we all wish to see in this world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, Ionways Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world. Now's the time. Now's the time.